This week on The Weekender, you can win yourself a two-player starter set of Battlegroup Northag from Plastic Soldier Company. We also are giving away for free a on-tabletop printable scenery billboard. So join us now as we get into the week's top news. The Weekend starts here.
Hi guys, and welcome to The Weekender. Right, have you gone mad yet? Because I know I'm this flipping close right now. Right, time to settle down. It's a Friday night. It's time to get stuck back into our hobby. Let's let all the shite that's going on right now wash off us. And let's have some fun with the Jerry, the Ben, and the Lloyd. Right. Hello. To start it off, let's start with the shit news.
Get it out of the way first.
Crap out of the way. Oh. So the shit news is that UK Games Expo 2020 has been cancelled, okay? I got a chance to have a sit down with the team from UK Games Expo. There'll be a link in the show notes to that where they talk about the impact that COVID-19 has had on the show, what their plans are, how you can get a refund or help the show continue by leaving it in and then joining the show next year. There's confirmed dates for next year. So really, it's all laid out there. Not a damn thing the fellas can do. But they have you sorted, they have you covered, and they have you taken care of. So definitely go and check that out. And anything that we can do to help the team over at UK Games Expo, we will be doing our darndest to try and help. Right. This weekend, Jerry, we have a bit of a celebration going on, don't we?
Celebration is, the least of us. There is two jam-packed days from the guys at Plastic Soldier as they are launching two new games, new for them, because one of them is a compendium. So on Saturday, they're going to kick off. They're now going to be publishing Mortem et Glorium, which covers about 3,500 years of warfare.
just a few then.
Just a few. Last time I looked, there were over 650, I think, army lists on the MEG website. Wow. That you can go in and, you know, so any period, any position in the world geographically, and any country probably is covered in there. So they're PSC are taking over MEG. They're launching their new version of the compendium, which compiles the standard version of MEG, the Maximus big game version, and Paco, which is the compact half-scale version. And we're going to be running, in conjunction with them, interviews with the author. They're going to be doing some webinars as both of the Simons. So Dr. Simon Elliott and Simon Hall, the writer, are both going to be running Paco and Maximus games consecutively on the Saturday, and then we'll be doing like a preview of the two battles they're planning on running, which are historical refights. They're going to be coming in midway, doing another webinar where people can ask questions as to how the fights are going, and then in the evening they'll do like a sum up. That'll be streamed on our site, and also the webinars can be joined if you want to ask questions, which is good. We have unboxing.
When you say streamed on our site, what do they do? They just go to the homepage on tabletop.com?
Just go to the homepage on tabletop, and you'll be able to see those three webinars as they kick off. So the first one of those is at 11:30. Yeah. We'll have unboxings for the new Ultracast sculpts for Mortem et Glorium as well. You were going to ask something else there, Lloyd. I cut you off. Assuming they've arrived in post. I've been assured this is going to... I feel like The Longest Day. I'm sure we will go over at night. I'm assured of this. I'm assured we will have posts. Anyway.
Are these the new 15 mil?
These are their version. So they've got three ranges that they're going to be working on, but these are going to be launched in Ultracast, which is... a plastic, it's a softer plastic than hard plastic. It's not a PVC, it's like a resin type affair that they're working with for the first time. But the ones I've seen online so far have looked exceptional. So I'm hoping to get my hands on some of them at the start myself. So we're going to have
15 mil, yes?
15 mil. Quids in on 15 mil. And then that's the Saturday, which is, you know, a little bit jam-packed.
Yeah, before you move on to Sunday, we do have a hub and everything set up for Meg.
Yes.
Just share the screen. So if you're interested in finding out more about Meg, you can visit ontabletop.com. And then you can go to the Meg section just using the navigation at the top. And then you can see that we're starting to fill out content, because the whole thing's brand new, sort of get up to speed sort of thing. And if you want to then visit the website, if you click here, that'll take you on through to the Meg website. So that's your two ports of call.
Yeah, so if you look at the very top there, there's the 650 plus army lists, which are a big, big chunk.
Wow, that does cover a lot of different periods of history.
Oh yeah, and when you click into it, it goes here are all the army lists in the subgenre. So yeah, they're massive, and those are always available on this website and are always being added to. It's a very big community-driven game. It's very popular with ancient and historic players.
Samurai seems to be in that. Yeah. Where are they covered by that? Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Where in here did you see them?
Because the system itself works for any sort of masked battle game.
Early Asian and later Asian, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Ah. You all know that I'm on a journey to become a world-renowned game developer myself.
We do. We're all aware of this.
Yes.
I invented a game this week.
Did you?
So I did. Yep. A samurai kung fu fighty thing, right? And it was inspired by Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. Okay.
Interesting.
Which is Chinese.
Chinese. Oh, yeah.
I mentioned kung fu. So kung fu sword fighting. Mm. Everybody was kung fu sword fighting. And here's how it would work.
Oh.
You get a two-player starter set, and in that starter set would be beautiful 15 mil hard metal minis, right? And a roll of fishing gut. And what you do is you tie little strings to each of your fingers and have one mini on the end, right? And then you basically, at each end of the table, you then got your hands in and go,
I wasn't excited about that idea when you first started describing it. But once you did this, it all came to life. It can get my trees and it can be dancing along the top of the trees.
How did combat mechanics work? Like conkers?
Conkers, yeah. Conkers. That was it. That's exactly it.
Oh, you don't want metal minis for that. No way.
Yeah. No, conkers, conkers.
Conkers are the way to go.
I advise a good quality varnish. but conkers. Easiest game in the world to play. And it will be visually stunning.
Oh, yeah.
It really would be. I can't wait to see the first Let's Play.
Anyway, to cut a long story short, tune in on Tabletop this weekend to see what Simon says.
Oh, we've got Sunday, though, as well.
Tune in to On Tabletop on Saturday and Sunday to see what Simon's
What are we covering on the Sunday?
On the Sunday is Battle Group Northag. So this is World War III, starting in 1983. And at 10 o'clock, we have an interview with Warwick Kinraid, the author for Battle Group. John sits down to talk to him. We should also be unboxing some of the new 10mm figures for the Soviet and British forces. Cool. That would be the first two launching. Assuming they've arrived in the post. I'm assured of this. I'm assured. And then around 5 o'clock, I will be having a chat with Piers about the plans for the future for both Battle Group Northag and regular Battle Group. Cool. Because World War II fans are not being left out in the cold, so to speak. See what I did there? Cold War.
Sweet.
Okay. So, yeah. Big weekend of some cool stuff going on. Get stuck in. Now we come to that all-important show, all-important part of the show, the most important part of the show, where it's Indie of the Week, where we're going to be talking about the world-renowned game developer, Warren Johnston. That's not correct, is it? Indie of the Week! Who's the Indie of the Week this time, boys?
I thought you said Boris Johnson for a minute then. I suppose he keeps making miniatures. So
he is making minis.
I can't stop him.
I assume we're all talking about the buses he makes out of wooden.
Oh, yes, yes, of course, yes.
Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. You make one and then four come along at once out of the woodwork. But yes,
that's the one. So this week's Indie of the Week is Die Hard Miniatures from the renowned Tim Prow. If people are old in the tooth, long in the tooth, they may remember Tim as being one of the heavy metal team from GW pretty much from the start. He was one of the first heavy metal painters in, and he essentially picked up sculpting on his tea breaks at White Dwarf, at Linton, and well, before Linton. So he went off into the wide world after being a painter and started sculpting, and he sculpted for a lot of companies. So Heartbreaker, Reaper, he's been here, there, and everywhere. I know he's done some stuff for Mantic. And this is a really nice selection of...
Oh, finally, someone with big school photos. Look at that.
Oh, I thought you'd like that. Old school style sculpting. So there's an old hammer feel, certainly to the fantasy and the sci-fi. But they are absolutely gorgeous for that. And there's a really nice mix of stuff in there, because you're not just going elves, undead, orcs, dwarves, there are elves, dwarves, orcs, and blah, blah, blah in there. But there's also interesting things that you don't normally see. So you see snake people. And occasionally a snake people range will pop up somewhere. But then there's also sci-fi snake people, and there's undead snake people. So actually seeing skeleton snake people kicking around. All of these things are...
Ooh, look at that.
Yeah, and I really love what he's got, because there's a nice blend of the unique and the weird, which for the likes of, there's a lot of games out now that things like Scrappers or Rogue Stars and games like that these would go straight into.
I didn't know I needed snake people until I seen this.
No, Ophidians occasionally rear their head in places and then they disappear again. If we're looking through sci-fi.
Yeah, I want to see the fantasy stuff.
Before we leave sci-fi, if you go to the next page, you've already got open there, because there's a musician. In fact, Lemmy, the sci-fi commander.
Oh, I see. Yep, here we go.
Awesome!
I will point out that Undead Lemmy, the musician command group, was sculpted before Lemmy passed away. It's none the worse for that. I'm glad to see Lemmy still out there and rocking us.
Lemmy looked like that before he passed away. Let's be honest. I think even Lemmy himself would appreciate that. That reminds me. Such a blast from the past. When I was a youngster, right, loved the electric guitar, and there was an electric guitar poster. I think it was either electric guitar poster of a skeleton bursting out of a grave with an electric guitar. And I think it was
it's not the SG, it bites.
No, it wasn't an SG, it was a Gibson. James Hetfield plays it.
That big flying V looking thing.
But it's not a flying V.
No, but, yeah.
It's let me find the name of it. Please.
That's going well.
Somebody will... an Explorer. The Gibson Explorer. I knew I'd get it somewhere. But it was a skeleton bursting out of a grave with a Gibson Explorer. And I always wanted to be that skeleton.
That skeleton.
It's just like, rock and roll, bitches. And it was like, oh, yes. And seeing Lemmy there, it just brings back memories to proper metal back in the day when skeletons played metal. Love it. I want that model.
Well, wait to see some of the other things lurking in the fantasy range then, because you may end up putting a little list together.
Uh-huh.
Right, here we go.
So okay.
Fantasy is nicely split down. fantasy is everything in one big chunky list, which is beautiful. Right. But if you're just after like chaos or snake people or undead, they have sublists for those, so you can go hooking for them. But some of my particular favorites, they do a group of heroes. You can see one of them there. So the Emberwood Archer. Yeah.
The so, and Warrior Princess.
And it's a lovely little collection. I think he has it bundled as a collection anyway. But you can see even the Dark Elf Sorcerer there back in the old days when they were allowed to be creepy and evil.
Mm-hmm.
Where have you gone to? Oh, you've jumped into the Erykin. So the frog and snake people is a whole group of their own. The Erykin, it's just a little old school slan.
Yeah. Look at that one. Oh,
Are the Erokin the range that are sort of, they're fantasy, but they've also got sci-fi stuff? So they're kind of lizard men with guns as well, I think.
Yeah, which is perfect for old school slam, because they were Star Trekkers.
Who
would land on the Warhammer world and shoot everybody with a plasma gun.
Yeah, so if you start
puny technology.
So if you go into that section, you get like the fantasy versions and the sci-fi versions.
Yeah, it just puts them all together into one lovely, lovely collection. If you go to, I want to say it's page... What we find there, or the beast handler.
Oh, that's cool. Go get some of those beasts. They'd be much better croutons. Forget the croutons, I'm having those.
If you can find the Chaos Musician from the Chaos Command, it's a musician that people won't normally lay their hands on. You've heaved around a bit, so
I've gone back to the main fantasy page.
So throw yourself up to the top and click on Chaos. That link's already open if you're attempting to put that group together.
Oh, all right,
you'll find it's the last group anyway.
Chaos. Ah, here we go, Chaos.
That's the one. Because this is a Chaos musician you don't often see. Scroll down. I have a sneaking suspicion he's on page 3, but we'll not jump too far ahead in case he's not.
Uh-huh. You get to look at some cool miniatures in the meantime anyway. So.
Can you see Harry the Chaos, or Harry the Hammer, the Chaos Warrior, at the very bottom of the screen there?
Mm-hmm.
Based on that classic Warhammer fantasy artwork.
I don't see any musicians. There's just one page.
Oh, dear.
We've lost
it. In that case, it'll be in fantasy then. I will find it.
Look at this guy.
I love that guy. Vigo looks awesome.
We're a bit all over the place, but that's one of the cool things about this site. It's just
that's the joy.
It's just a sporadic. Look at all this. Look at that. That's cool.
Go here, go there, go everywhere.
Yeah.
I
love that one.
Yeah, that's a very Arabian feel, but it also feels a lot like Dragon's Lair.
It also looks like one of the, there's an iconic, when you say iconic, it's one of those like, they're the feature characters that they do in Pathfinder, and it reminds me of one of the female fighters from that as well. So.
Keep working your way across those tabs at the top, Lloyd, do you see?
Yeah. A delightful bunch.
Yeah. That's a...
He was just...
Oh, there he... Yeah.
Some guy opened. I was like, oh, I have to see this.
You're nothing if not.
Harry the Hammer. So cool.
That's a great model, isn't it? Oh, look at that. Look at that. That is awesome.
Page 3 of the fantasy miniatures. Or I can just send you a link in something. Do you want me to just send you a link?
Yeah, let's have a link. Let me close all these windows and we'll start.
All those tabs. If I fire you that, did you see that? Did you hear that, mother? Or do you want it in the chat?
Look at this. Can you see it?
There we go.
Yay.
An accordion.
Answering the question of how do undead musicians work for once and for all. No horns here. That would make no sense.
Because they have no lungs.
When was the last time you seen a squeeze box on anything?
That's amazing. That is amazing.
That was a long journey to get there.
I think it was worth it.
I totally feel it was worth it because I'm just so amused by it.
How much is that? £6? I'm going to order it.
I mean, when you're ordering Lemmy for Warren there. But yeah, he's adding to the site all the time. He had a successful Kickstarter a few months ago that's starting to fulfill. So over the next few months, over the spring summer period, those things from the Kickstarter are going to start going on to the website as well. So
very cool.
There's a nice flow coming through from things like the Kickstarters.
Yeah,
that will just keep adding to it, and I think there's some cavalry coming for fantasy as part of that.
Goblins with big faces.
Yeah. Big characterful faces. He looks like one of the ones from the Gummy Bears.
Yes.
Cool. Yes.
When this is over, I'm just going to spend an evening on this website.
It's the best way to do it.
Love it. Right. That is Die Hard Miniatures.
A skeleton centaur.
Like it's the body of a man, the head of a horse, and the legs of a horse.
Yeah.
That's not even a reverse centaur.
No. It's what horror hath got wrought.
Oh, look at the skeleton snake man.
Whoa, that's cool.
Okay.
It's one of those mutant two-headed snakes.
How about we just forget about the rest of the show? And we just browse this for the rest of the day.
That's this very Conan. I love that.
I love that one. Yeah. Oh.
So cool.
Yeah. Dear me. Oh.
He's a talented fellow.
Yeah. Look at that one there with Lloyd with the yeah, him.
And we can all thank Rick Priestley.
Why?
Because he said he was going to go off and do sculpting. And Rick Priestley went, you'll never make as much money as you do painting miniatures for us and for White Dwarf.
Yeah.
He used that motivation to spur him on to become a sculptor.
This is the range I've been looking for. This is cool.
Oh, you should have asked in advance then.
Yeah. All that conversion work you've done on those skeletons, this you is didn't it. Need to now.
How many times have I been on talking about, I want skeletons that look more like regular dudes in regular armory rather than bat wings and all that?
Yeah,
I think at that stage, though, you weren't a fan of metal. You were still very much in the plastic camp at that one. Otherwise, we would have told you about this.
Oh. Hoarder of information. Hoarder of information.
Okay, that is Indie of the Week. Die Hard Miniatures by Tim Prow. Check him out at diehardminiatures.com. Right. It's time to continue our journey through Ben's News.
Coming to you from the center of Northwestern Europe. Covering board games, war games, card games, and all that you love. It's the News.
Okay, Ben, the pressure's on. Take us on a journey, my man.
Okay, so the first bit of news is, I guess, maybe of a sort of more our thoughts kind of thing, I suppose. And it's the news that Games Workshop have announced that they're going to be reopening their online store, so their web store. So, in fact, today, the web store is live, 1st of May, so you'll be able to go and check out some stuff on there and see what you think. They have also said that they're going to be looking towards shipping towards independent retailers, and one of the options available to retailers is this Catechin Colonel that you can see here, which is in no way at all related to anything to do with jungles and predators or anything like that, of course.
Villain!
son
of a bitch!
But it has been pointed out that this new character will work particularly well with another famous Catechin character whose name has escaped me right now.
Sly Marbo,
in which you can actually have very much the whole sort of Arnie thing going on there for Predator and that kind of thing. So yeah, that is the sort of fancy character that they've put into the mix for those people who have independent stockists they want to go and shop from. Although, of course, there are lots of interesting things going on around that. But it's an interesting one, this. But
This dude here.
If you do like 40K, yes. The guy just above that's the new version of Sly Marbo. That's an older version. So it's the fellow. That's the one. That's the dude. There's your Arnie. But not Arnie. But definitely is Arnie. And the best thing is, if you want to paint him, you know, properly to do, you know, properly in tune with the film, all you got to do is cover him in mud and just leave the eyes, and you've painted the model perfectly. Yeah. So it's great. Yeah, you don't have to worry about any of the layering or anything like that.
It's not effect for the win.
Just hit some contrast wormwood and
just splash it all on. You're done.
We are a rescue team, not assassins.
but if you're in the mood to pick up some 40K and Age of Sigmar and all that kind of stuff, then their web store is open, I suppose. So yeah, there you go. But yes, of course, we have our own opinions on this.
Well, where do we start? Okay. Yes, Everything is going to start slowly coming back online. So, as of today, the difficulty in all of this has been kind of communication. There's been a kind of a few communication, we'll call them missteps, really. It's just kind of made life a little bit difficult for folk. Maybe a bit more difficult than it maybe needed to be. But the difficulty with that is there's an old adage that no good deed goes unpunished. And the problem with this mini is that one part of Games Workshop maybe just got a bit overexcited and decided to come out and tell the entire community that they were giving this mini to the independent retailers to try and, you know, support the independent retailers. But nobody'd said anything to the independent retailers of how this was going to work. You know, independent retailers might have thought, well, maybe we'll get 10 or 20, 30 of these sprues, you know, bits of plastic come through, and then, you know, I can sell them to my customers. As the kind of email sort of, the announcement sort of suggested. But the but from what I can gather now, no, stores might get one, maybe two. Big stores might get up to four, okay? And you're not allowed to sell them. But you are allowed to raffle them or auction them.
Hey, what? But if I can see it, I can sell it. Surely.
We can't sell it. We cannot actually sell it to a punter. But you can stick it on eBay and auction it and stuff. I don't know. It all feels a bit outside the spirit of all of this. You know, I don't like the scalping thing that typically goes on in our hobby, where people buy up limited edition stuff and then it ends up on eBay and it goes for super inflated prices. And I've not really been a fan of that. Hey, it's economics, it's free trade. You know, I'm not that put out by it. But I will admit to not being particularly a fan of it, because I just don't think it's the healthiest thing within the community. So to be in a position where you're kind of officially told, yeah, you have to put this on as an auction, it just feels strange to me. There's a weird optics to all of this that I just can't quite understand. But the good news is, store.ontabletop.com is back in business, baby. So,
haven't gone away, you know.
Today, spoken like a true Jerry. So today, we re-enabled the ability to back order items. We have the first of our large orders going in to start replenishing the stock levels. You know, anybody that wants to pick up all their 40K stuff and paints and things like that from store.ontabletop.com, you'd be very welcome, and it would be a massive help to us by doing it. But let me get a but in here. We don't know exactly what the score is on stock replenishment, because Workshop themselves don't know exactly how stock replenishment, how smoothly that whole process is going to go. So just to qualify all of this, we turned off the ability to back order specifically so that we could continue to guarantee a really good service for our customers out there. We didn't want anybody disappointed. We didn't want anybody having orders held up longer than they needed to be. Now that we can get stock again, we are turning that ability back on. But this is the point where you place orders where you may end up with a bit of a wait time while we wait for products and things to come in. So we're putting some big banners and things like that all over the platform to try and make sure that you're aware of that. So don't crucify us. We will be doing our very, very best to make sure that this runs smoothly for you. But this is the period now where it will be more difficult to hit the usual timescales and the speedy turnarounds that we have done in the past. And it will be like that for a while until we can rebuild the stock levels back up. Hopefully not be that long before we get it rebuilt back up. But it will take some time for us to do that and for everything all to fall back into place again. So orders very much appreciated. We're very confident we can get the stuff out to you. We've had great conversations with some of the folks in the trade teams in GW. So it's all looking good so far. Yeah. Please just be aware, timescales may be extended, and we will be doing our best to warn you in advance that that can be the case.
So if I bring up the website, yes. So we should be able to take orders again for 40K and Age of Sigmar.
Mm-hmm. Anything Games Workshop related, and all the hobbies and the paints.
All the paints and everything.
We've just had a massive restock of Green Stuff World. Mm-hmm. So we're fine there, and we're getting regular stock fulfillment on Flames of War, and I believe we're still getting stock up fulfillment on the likes of D&D and Star Wars as well, and we have a ton of Conquest, but I'll probably have more to talk about on Conquest shortly in the coming weeks. We've got some cool stuff planned there.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yes, in the other news, the whole part of this is we're also looking now to reopen the visitor center in phases to try and help further support the hobbyists in the local community. So we've invested in a kind of, what would you call it, video intercom kind of system. So that we can reintroduce the click and collect options. So phase one will be getting click and collect back up and running for people within the local area who want to be able to get their stuff quickly. So what they'll be able to do is to place an order, have it click and collect. Our team will get it packed up. You come along to the visitor center, you do the video comm, and then they will leave your order for you, ready for you to pick up and take with you. Phase two, a little bit ways down the road yet, while we wait on guidance from government, etc. But phase two may entail, we may look to start opening up for browsing by appointment. So half hour blocks where folks can book out an appointment to be able to come in and just browse around the store and, give people. The reason I want to do that is, yes, you could do it via click and collect, but, this is an essential service. people are going mad, and I want to give some folk an opportunity to get out for half an hour and to safely come in and have the run of the store to just browse around, look at some cool stuff. Maybe, hopefully, buy one or two items, but more—it's just more to retain a connection with the local community and stuff like that. Because it's hard on them. The all gaming, all meeting up with friends has had to stop. So what we can do to safely, and that's the key to all of this, to safely start to bring things back into normality. We will do our very best to try and do that. Yeah. So, we are open for business. God willing, it'll all go smoothly and we won't let people down. That's my biggest concern, and the biggest concern of Tom and Justin and all of us and Jerry that work in that end, is we just want to make sure that that things run smoothly. But a lot of it is kind of out of our control now.
There's so many little cogs in the system. There's Games Workshop themselves. There's other suppliers. There's delivery companies like UPS and stuff. Everybody's at different stages of where they are in terms of service.
Yeah, the whole operational chain, we're reliant on Games Workshop, okay? That's difficult. Games Workshop are at a size that, if it doesn't work for you, tough. It's just how it is. Games Workshop will be reliant on UPS. UPS are at a size compared to Games Workshop that if it doesn't work for them, tough. That's just the way it is. There's a number of steps there, But hopefully, you know, with some teamwork, and we can try and keep the whole thing running smoothly, and, you know, take steps as an industry to get things back to some level of what the new normal might be.
So moving on to another news story that is also sci-fi related in a strange way, I guess, is there is a new range of train coming out from a company called Brutal Cities down in Australia, in Sydney. And their first range of terrain is going to be all sort of 28 to 32 mil style terrain. And it's all designed around the idea of brutalist architecture.
Nice. Sort
of spinned up for a sci-fi world. So as you can see from these very atmospheric and lovely looking pictures, it's the kind of stuff that you could use for all your cyberpunk style games. You're doing a lot of Infinity. This kind of thing works really nicely for that. Basically any tabletop deck game in a sci-fi setting that has these kind of idea of grim cities and that kind of thing, this terrain is sort of built to sort of work within that kind of world and genre and stuff.
This is Blade Runner.
Oh yeah, it's Blade Runner, basically.
I'm not going mad or anything here. This just screams Blade Runner to me. It's
all that kind of like prefabricated style buildings, big blocky concrete things like you would have seen in the Soviet era, that kind of thing, sort of hyped up to the next level, up to 11 and kind of things like that. So some really nice looking terrain. Brutal Cities as a whole aren't just going to be doing this kind of sci-fi stuff, as you see here. They've also got plans to do a lot of stuff, the sort of like fantasy and pulp and all that kind of thing. And as well as it also being in that kind of 28 to 32 mil bracket, they're also looking at doing some stuff in 15 mil as well. The website should be going live effectively this weekend. And even though they are in Australia, they have been talking about doing some kind of like flat shipping rates for a lot of their stuff. So even though they are far away, and they're far away from pretty much everybody, because it's, you know, in an entirely different corner of the world, you should be able to pick up some of their terrain and get it sent out to you and enjoy it to its fullest and maybe make some interesting scenes like that, as you can see.
Cool. Do we know if it's like pre-colored stuff or is it just regular?
It's just regular HDF that just needs to be sprayed or whatever you want to do with it, and it'll be ready to go effectively. Because it's that kind of brutalist style, it'll lend itself to very quick and easy paint schemes, which is good.
Sweet.
Next up, we have some Dead Zone news.
So Dead Zone is the sort of smaller skirmishy style game that Mantic do, set within the sort of sci-fi world of Warpath. And even though it's a slightly smaller scale game, it does involve pretty massive miniatures. And one of the new miniatures that was sort of previewed and teased a couple of weeks ago and has now taken painted form is this rather awesome looking Asterion Spectra, as you can see here. So a lot of people had apparently within the Mantic community been going, hey guys, when do the Asterions get something badass and awesome? And so they replied with this. Here is the Spectra for you to check out. I think this is possibly one of the coolest looking sci-fi models they've ever made. And I really like the Forgefather stuff, but this is a very, very cool.
Really? You surprised me, Ben.
Who would have thought? I like the bearded sci-fi guys. But no, so this is a big model that comes with a couple of different weapon attachments.
Oh, he is a biggie, isn't he?
And he comes with a translucent shield eventually as well. So very cool.
It's going to be fascinating to see how that plays, because unlike the other big guys in Dead Zone / Warpath, the likes of the Stuntbots, Striders, First Generation Plague, they're all big, brutal, stomp forward, very slow punch things. This fella is much more agile, faster, big shield, so that's handy for leaping around. It has, also can leap around. It has some form of jump pack. So it's going to be more about outflanking and getting into a position where you can do some damage. So I'm quite keen on that. Not keen on playing the Astrians, but I'm quite keen on seeing how it goes. Stick with my enforcers, thank you very much. Set a vermin on them.
Next up, Ben's going to take us to the Dark Age.
Yeah, so this one, I basically put this in so that Jerry and Lloyd would go, ooh, finally, this Ben is nice.
Finally, a nice little treat for us.
So this is the fellows at Brother Vinny's. So they have put together two new releases for their Dark Age sort of / saga range. And this is two Banner Bearer models. So they've got the Banner Bearer for the Normans and a Banner Bearer for the Vikings as well. But because this period has lots of sort of interchangeable parts and all that kind of thing for all the different factions. You could easily use them and sort of tweak them around to fit into pretty much anything if you really wanted to. But yeah, two really nice looking new intricate models they've done for those guys there. The actual range of sort of Dark Age stuff that Brother Vinny does is very good. If I would also hazard to say, rather not safe for work, so bear that in mind.
But I was going to bring it up.
I would not go to their website.
The other window. Hold on.
Yeah, I would not go to their website and look around just willy nilly. Okay. But
is there many willies and many nillies?
there are many nillies. But as I sort of said in the news story for this, this kind of shows what Brother Vinny can do when they don't go too weird. A lot of their stuff is really top notch and very high quality, and really good for doing character miniatures to go with your sort of your Dark Age armies. They've done loads of really awesome characters and that kind of thing, and it all fits in that sort of 28 mil wheelhouse.
So. It's not weird; it's just natural, man.
some of it is natural.
Oh, it hits you in the face as soon as you go there, because I've gone over there.
when all of this is over, we're able to travel again, right? I've already said to Justin, I'm going to take him to Florida, and we're going to go like gator hunting or some weird thing, right? But I know a particularly good nudist beach, right?
Oh, lovely! Yeah.
And me and you, we'll go there, and you know, I will get you feeling content within the
Well, it's that's
and you can watch out for harpoons coming my direction.
Oh, yes, yeah. I can tell that Lloyd is clearly browsing the website.
Enjoying them millies.
Well, I went straight for the priest.
All right.
That's a 180 from what normally happens, isn't it?
Let me show you.
It can mean anything in that range. Oh, yeah.
Which window is it?
Do they have a Docker?
I don't know.
This has been a weird episode for going off book and clicking on links.
Check that guy out.
Oh, okay, yeah. There you go. That's safe. That's fine. Yeah,
there
that's
we
fine.
Go. Yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's Sir Brendan.
It's certainly Sir excellent. I love it.
Yeah, as I say, a lot of the stuff that Brother Vinny do is really, really good. It's very top-notch stuff. They've done lots of really cool sci-fi stuff and all that kind of thing as well. So if you can go look it around that website, but I would say, you know, parental warning. Guidance.
Watch little eyes. Watch little eyes.
There's so many nudies on here.
They are going to end up Indie of the Week some of these weeks, aren't they? Oh,
God. I thought we just did.
Okay.
Yes.
Some other extraordinary sculptors. We have some Raging Heroes.
Yeah, so Raging Heroes, they've been running what they call their Heroes Infinite 3D printing Patreon. We're seeing a lot of sculptors move over to this kind of thing at the moment, and sort of doing this kind of Patreon style thing where you pledge for the month and you'll get a whole bunch of 3D STL files to go and print off at home. This is their new selection of stuff for May, which is very much based around the idea of Drow, Spider Folk, the Underdark, and that kind of thing. Some very cool looking miniatures they've been doing for this. A lot of people will know that we've been following Raging Heroes for quite a while. John's been doing a lot of painting tutorials and build videos based on some of their range. Really nice characterful stuff that is very good for kind of building fantasy armies, sci-fi stuff, and of course being useful for Dungeons and Dragons and that kind of sort of dungeon delving aspect, because you could use all these characters as foes you might face as you head down into the Underdark, as I was saying before. But some really nice looking stuff coming up for May here. And a lot of it, they've got a Facebook group set up for Heroes Infinite as well, where they share a lot of work from a lot of other people who are trying and testing out all the ways to print all this stuff. Mm-hmm. So if you are needing some help and guidance in the 3D printing area, especially for some of these slightly more complex models, there is a lot of people out there that are going to help you with that. There should also be a link to a Q&A, which Jerry did with the guys at Raging Heroes, where they actually sat down. Well, we actually sat down and talked about all the different processes they go through and what they've sort of been working on, that kind of thing as well.
So, some of the plans as well they have.
Yeah,
for
some
the
of their plans for the future. That's some of the sort of printed stuff off by the community as well.
Yeah, the community have done some mad things. I mean, in itself, those are two of the big pieces that they launched last month for the Pirates of the White Sea. Mm. And I mean, the crab. in and of itself to get it to fit on their build plate was just madness. The ship is absolutely huge. But then somebody went in and went, you know what, I really want a giant model. I think you may see it a couple of images down where they just blew it up to like 100, 150% went, yeah, because that's the amount of detail on there that I can just print this out at home as some sort of massive bust slash figurine.
Yeah, so it was really cool to see them sort of playing around with the idea of paint, of doing those larger figures, because then you start to see a lot of the details in more sort of in more detail. I guess.
More detail, yeah.
For those people that wanted to, you know, paint it rather than play with it, which is really cool. So, but yeah, that's a full Q&A there with the guys at Raging Heroes. If you want to go and see what they've got coming up, so that'll be down in the show notes for you to go and read.
Probably also worth pointing out for any of you folk that are enjoying your 3D printing, we are giving away another 3D print file this week for free. Stay tuned to the end of the show. We'll talk about that. But also, at the start of this this whole lockdown thing, we opened up our Cult of Games Discord server to everyone. And in that server, we have a recently launched 3D printing channel in there where we are helping each other out with 3D printing, you know, advice, what to buy. There's some great tips in that. So if you're into your 3D printing, or if it's something that you're interested in and you want to start taking your first tentative steps, come across, join the Discord and hop in there, and we'll
certainly one of those things that I think is really important, especially with this, with 3D printing right now, is that while it has got easier, it's not easy by any, it's not a sort of print and go kind of thing. So having that kind of information and sort of that shared community aspect around this kind of aspect of the hobby is really good. Yeah. So obviously, you know, as you know, people with the hobby sat around and, you know, talked about how the best way to build fences and hills and all that kind of thing was, it's exactly the same kind of thing now when it comes to 3D printing. So if you have questions, you can ask it and people will definitely have an answer for you over in the Discord. So that'll be linked in the show notes as well.
Okie dokie. RPG news next, Ben. Freeligan. We've got some more news on the Alien front.
Yeah, so they came out with their Alien core rules not too long ago. For those people that wanted to dive in and play through the Alien movies and worlds on the tabletop, there was two sort of modes for you to play that through. There was the kind of more cinematic scenario style thing where you could sort of effectively play out the movies in a way where you're probably not guaranteed to escape by the end of it. And then there was also the slightly more sort of narrative and wild sort of world scope version of the game as well, where you could go off and do things in a slightly different manner, sort of, you know, exploring the wider world of Alien. But with these two new pre-orders, releases and stuff that they've been working on right now, there is the new starter set, which you can see there, which puts you in the boots of a set of Marines. And we obviously know how well that always goes when you're in the Alien world. And it comes from with a cinematic scenario called Chariot of the Gods. So you want to dive in and play through that. It works for a whole bunch of different players, and it's a really nice sort of like marine focused adventure. The second sort of big announcement they made was that they've also got this new supplement, which you can see there, which includes a new scenario called Destroyer of Worlds. And once again, this allows you to play as a group of Marines going off to, as you can imagine there from the cover, deal with some xenomorph threats off in the darkness of space where no one can hear you scream, as they say. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so these are two new sets. The Destroyer of Worlds one in particular, that requires you to have either the starter set or the core rules in order to play it. But if you have either of those, you can dive in and start playing around with it. Very, very cool stuff indeed. I know a lot of people have been playing this, really, really enjoying it. It's hard to try and get horror right on the tabletop, but it seems from what I've been hearing from a lot of people who played the Alien game, that Freeligan have really got the sort of mechanics of it down. So as long as you've got a good games master and all that kind of thing, you'll have a lot of fun with this one, I think. So yeah,
I can only imagine how atmospheric this game game could be. It's I think the last video game I kind of slightly played was that, I can't even remember the name of it, but it was that one where you had to basically creep around and hide from the alien.
You didn't play that. You experienced it. You certainly didn't play it.
Well, okay,
you probably cowered in a corner like I did. As soon as I found a locker, I jumped in it, and 45 minutes later, I was still in it.
Oh, Alien Isolation.
That's the one. Yeah, it did a little tour around our studios. Every one of us borrowed it for a while. So, yes, you're absolutely right, Lloyd. I experienced Right, we're going to take a swish. We'll be right back.
Hi, everybody. I am joined by James from Ulmic Games to have a chat about the new game coming to Kickstarter. So, Ulaya Chronicles, James, yeah?
That's right, yeah, yeah. So, good to be here, Justin. Good to see you again. It's been a while.
It has, but it's always good to see you and see what's happening within the sort of universe of the Drowned Earth.
Indeed. Well, Ulaya Chronicles is kind of, I have to, from the outset, say it started off as an expansion to the Drowned Earth and doing something that everybody's been asking for ages, which is AI dinos. Mm-hmm. But in the development process, as often happens, it's really kind of just evolved into its own thing and become much more elaborate and now really sort of deserves its own title. But for those Drowned Earth players out there, it shares a lot of the same DNA. Mm-hmm. But for people who've never played the Drowned Earth before, you don't need to know anything about the Drowned Earth. It's a simpler game than Drowned Earth, but you know, some of you, Justin, I know you will notice a bunch of similarities.
Well, I mean, like for me, the big things for the original Drowned Earth game was just the granular nature of being able to like shoot someone as they're leaping midway through like a gap, catching people in those cinematic moments. I'm really hoping that with this being sort of Drowned Earth adjacent, that DNA is really going to come through and travel across to it.
Yeah, well, we've still got the same dice mechanic. Some of these stats are a little bit simplified. I'm going to throw up a profile card. You know, anybody who's a Drowned Earth player, this will be instantly recognizable. So the larger part is still there and still the same. But we've stripped down some of the rules, made things simpler. The board's a little bit smaller. This is actually a kind of like almost a dungeon crawler experience. I mean, it's still measuring and dice and it's still 100% a war game, but the structure is campaign based. It's a whole bunch of narrative games which all tell a story and all are sequential. There's an in-between game phase where you have to answer questions, make difficult choices, record things on your party sheet, sort of almost RPG-like in a way. And those decisions will have a really significant effect later on. You know, if you rob the merchant that you meet by the roadside, he's not going to help you in scenario 11, unsurprisingly. You know, this kind of thing. So both during the game, things will happen which will change the course of the game you're playing, but it'll have a big effect on the campaign. And we've got, I think, a really cool and exciting story for people to uncover during the Ulaya Chronicles first installment. So more about that in a moment. But I think for an important point for Drowned Earth players is that this does also serve as an expansion. All of the AI rules, the solo and co-op rules that exist in Ulaya Chronicles will be importable into your Drowned Earth games. We're using the same range, same miniature scale, and there'll be a lot of backwards, the same dice, a lot of backwards compatibility. Ulaya Chronicles as a boxed set will give you a lot of stuff that you need to play the Drowned Earth and will, you know, sort of be a good gateway product in that sense. If that's the way you want to use it, and if you just want to play it standalone, it's going to be a single single purchase product. Everything you need to play is in the box. It's going to pass the Christmas morning test.
Okay, that I like to hear, because the number of times I see games where it's just, okay, I need this expansion, now I have the complete game. If you're telling me it's a one-box product where you have everything in the one shot, I am super happy.
Now, yeah, that's right. Everything you need to play, there's a board surface, there's map tiles, a board surface, there's scenery tiles, standees in the core box. You can upgrade those to miniatures as a different pledge level later down the line. You can do that slowly as you collect. You might already have some models which are suitable, which you want to use instead. So we're not committing people to a large initial purchase to have all of the miniatures that you need to play. The initial purchase will be, you know, pretty modest, and you can get playing straight away. Mm-hmm. But it, of course, if you want to pimp it out with amazing handmade scenery and you you know, want to paint all your figures and buy all the miniatures and what have you, that's completely open to do that as well.
Yeah, so you're keeping that barrier to entry as low as possible, just a nice little step up and you're in.
And something else I feel like is that, you know, I always fully intend on painting everything and making the scenery and what have you. But I will eventually do that. But I might want to get playing straight away, and I might want to play the first scenario and then paint a few models and then play with those models in the next scenario. Mm-hmm. And slowly over the course of the campaign, by the time I'm finished, everything's ready and perfect for my second playthrough.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like any time I'm coming to like a board game that has miniatures, the one thing I like to try and always make sure I do is everything gets like a color prime for a color coding. So say the enemies are in the red, the heroes are in green, and then you can just slowly build from there. But you can read what's happening on the tabletop a lot easier because of doing something like that.
Yeah,
that's me. Now, you've sent through some absolutely gorgeous artwork here. And
we've got a few pretty pictures to look at.
Oh yeah, the first one I'm seeing, I've got it on my laptop here, it'll be up on screen, but it's like some kind of a flooded research center. I'm seeing like missiles and stuff in the background.
Yeah, well, this is a particular scene in the story that I'm not going to talk about at all because it'll spoil the surprise. But this is the cover image for the game, and I think it's we'll just leave that one in people's minds for them to work out, you know, how might you end up finding your way into this facility and what are you doing there and why and all that sort of thing. All will become clear as you play through the campaign.
Yeah, but no, okay, if we're just teasing everybody on that one, the one thing that I'm really curious about, it really just hooked in my head there, is AI dinos. What's going on with this then?
So all of the dinosaur types will individually have an AI deck. We call it the action deck, and that controls the dinosaurs during their turns. This is Drowned Earth. It has a reaction mechanic. They have very simple reactions. Each dino has a profile card, which lists two reactions, one to noise and one to movement, and they will repeat that same reaction every time. So it's quite easy to remember. You don't have to keep on looking things up. But then when it comes to their turn, you flip a card. In fact, we'll have a close up of one of these cards later on. But this is the Dilo deck, Dilophosaurs, and you flip a card and there are a bunch of actions. We've made them easy to read by using symbols rather than a lot of text. Mm-hmm. And there aren't too many symbols. We've also got a neat little symbol reference card. Nice. To make it super easy. And you just resolve the card and then move on to the next dino type. And basically the idea of having these as separate decks, this is the Utahraptor deck with different artwork. The idea is that each dino type has a different behavior, a different personality. So a lot of the games that I've played with kind of programmed movement and programmed AI, after a while you begin to get a little bit bored of the fact that you're always fighting, you know, the same zombie or whatever it is. Whereas in Alia Chronicles, every different dino type has a different tactical puzzle to solve. Mm-hmm. Each of them have different kinds of behaviors, which you can anticipate and predict, but you can't get it perfect all the time. You know what they might do, but ultimately they're unpredictable, but they're not random.
It also adds a nice learning curve at the beginning of the game when you start to play. Because if you imagine you're one of the heroes from the game walking out into the wilderness and you have come across a dino you've never seen before, never encountered before, you're not going to know how it's going to react.
But as you play
against it, you're going to have that experience of, you know, gaining the skills, learning how to deal with it, learning those tactics, which like that learning curve built into a game. Now, are you going to be adding new sculpts?
There definitely are new sculpts. How many new sculpts will, of course, depend on the success of the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. But we've got some we're happy to show people today. We've also got a little bit of concept art, which might give people teasers about what might be coming in the future. I don't know where you are in the photos.
I'm looking at the Raptor sculpt renders.
Yeah,
and they look absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah, they're really cool. The little murder birds. Mm-hmm. So these ones are an actual dinosaur type, which they've speculated had venom, because there are, in the fossil record, there are channels down the teeth, and we see it in venomous snakes. Mm-hmm. So poison rules.
Ooh, okay. Don't feed the wildlife, and don't feed them your friend.
You don't have to run faster than the dino, you just have to run faster than your friend.
Yeah, I just have to run faster than Warren. All right, now game space style, actual playing area. Are we talking a big play area, or is it going to be quite small and self-contained? And what
it's smaller there? Than the Drowned Earth. So we're looking at a 24 by 32 inch playing surface, and the game is going to ship with a mat to play on. Mm-hmm. And stretch goal, I'm really hoping that, you know, you can see one of the artwork the only one that we've got at the moment. What I'm hoping is to make this double-sided. Mm-hmm. And have a completely different environment. Mm-hmm. To play on in other scenarios, effectively. Gotcha. And make the tiles double-sided as well, so that they you've got different environmental sets, as it were.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next question is timeline. So we know the Drowned Earth is set post-apocalyptics, where the yep. society has finally managed to rebuild. For this particular game, are we working in the exact same sort of time space?
Exact same timeline. You might even, at some stage in the future, you might even see certain personalities that you recognize from the Drowned Earth. So yeah, we're temporally exactly the same.
Yeah.
Justin, I think I didn't fully answer your previous question. Oh. The playing surface is 32 by 24 inches.
Got it.
Instead of 36 by 36, which is a normal Drowned Earth table.
Perfect. Now, I'm also seeing some gorgeous artwork of a mountaintop island with like a facility in like a bay. Is this the area we're going to be playing in? Is this where the story's taking place?
So the full disclosure, Alia Chronicles is the name of the game system. Mm-hmm. The first title, and this Kickstarter is the first title in what I hope will be, if they're popular, a series of different campaign boxes. Mm-hmm. The first title is Raptor Claw Island. Mm-hmm. And you are looking now at Raptor Claw Island.
I get it.
The premise of the story is that you and your friends are washed up, shipwrecked on a beach, covered in rags, not knowing what's happened, and you have to find your way off this island. And you find your way off this island by finding out, you know, there's a big mystery going on there, and there's some interesting story to uncover. And you meet a certain group of people who you might need to make enemies or friends of in order to get what you want and get off the island. So if you move to the next slide, I'll give you exactly one guess as to what the group of people that you might meet next are going to be.
I'm guessing some form of Neo-Asian pirates.
Well, you might be right there, Justin. And it looks a bit like a pirate boat, that one, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And let's move swiftly on. Go to the next slide, because we've got some pirate sculpts to show you.
Oh, man. I love the little guy on the right with his like mechanical crab claw.
Yeah.
It's his strong arm.
He's pretty crazy, isn't he?
Oh, that is so cool. And so I love the fact that we're seeing the evolved apes in this as well.
Yeah, that's right. We've got a Barangay pirate, because everybody needs a gorilla pirate. Mm-hmm. So the story here, Justin, is these are NPCs in the campaign, and they'll be represented in the core box by tokens. And you'll be able to buy the miniatures for them if you want to use miniatures instead of tokens for the NPC characters. But these also double as a brand new Drowned Earth faction. So for Drowned Earth players, particularly Wayfarer players who are sick of the fact that they get gypped and nobody and they don't get enough releases. Bit of background information for anyone who doesn't know. They are the mercenary faction, and mm-hmm. so it's actually quite difficult to give them consistent releases, because as every faction can use them, it makes playtesting difficult. It also means that it waters down the unique character of the different ranges to do that. So we are, the Corsairs and the Wayfarers are effectively going to be a sister faction, which means that all Wayfarers can play as Corsairs, all Corsairs can play as Wayfarers, but Corsairs cannot be used as mercenaries like other Wayfarers.
Ah, I see. Well, I mean, like, it's an interesting concept and an interesting thing to talk about, because actually getting playtesting to work on mercenary factions that blend into others, it's, you have to choose, okay, which factions would they narratively work with, and what am I adding to this set of rules, this style of play that's going to change, and how is that going to affect how everything interplays with all of the different synergies that you already have built into the game?
Yeah. Yeah, you've got it in one. It's a tricky thing to get right thematically and rules wise. Mm-hmm. And in particular, it's just that thing of, you know, if you make a powerful mercenary model, then you see them everywhere. Everybody always creates a list mm-hmm. with them. If you don't make them powerful enough, then nobody's got any incentive to use them at all. Mm-hmm. If you make them work synergistically with some and not others, then they might as well just be part of the faction that you that you've built them to work with. You know, so the Corsairs is I think a good way of getting Wayfarer players new releases and new things to add to their faction, while at the same time getting over that mercenary issue.
Yeah, it lets you basically flesh out the mercenaries without unbalancing everything else.
And who in nice their right mind doesn't love a pirate?
Of course. Arr.
So we were during the campaign. I'm not going to say too much about it, but we're going to have some fun team building exercises. We're going to have team pirate, and working title was team hero. And come on, who's going to join Team Hero when there's Team Pirate? So we're going to have Team Pirate and Team Dino, and backers will be able to choose their affiliation. And we're going to have all sorts of fun activities setting these two groups off against each other and seeing who comes out victorious by the end of the campaign.
Nice. Now, I'm also seeing some concept art here for some other characters. Are these ones that you're possibly going to be unlocking, or is this something else?
No, so these are going to be, these are the hero models. These are your protagonists, mm-hmm. and they're unnamed heroes with a particular archetype. So from left to right, we've got a brawler, a tough, a scout, and a marksman. So you can see they kind of correspond a little bit to Drowned Earth character types as well, but you'll be able to, that your characters will level up as you go on. As stretch goals, I'm hoping that we're going to have head and arm swap and different weapon loadouts for each of the sculpts, in order that as you progress, you can actually model on the way that you've built your character and developed them. So there'll be a couple of different ways to build your tough. You'll have a little suite of mini upgrade cards, which will have different abilities on them, which you flip down when they're used and flip up at certain circumstances. The suite of cards are the pool from which you buy. Mm-hmm. So you'll spend XP. You can save up for one really good ability, or you can buy a bunch of little ones, or and you'll find some of them will work with other. There'll be some synergy between different cards, and so that combo is particularly powerful. You can choose the different way in which you build your character. These are nameless characters as well, so you can name them, you can write your backstory for them, mm-hmm. And really sort of customize them and make them your own. And we are hoping, this is a stretch goal, but we are hoping to also have them double as troops in the Drowned Earth, so unnamed troop types for the different factions, with different weapon options, different weapon loadouts.
Awesome. I like the idea that it's kind of like tabletop RPG a little bit, where you've got miniatures and you've got that, you know, the way video games do RPGs, where it's playing Skyrim, working through, you are the nameless hero, you name your hero, you create your hero, and you start building yourself up. I like seeing that feel and flavor coming to the tabletop with this.
Yeah, I do too. I think it really, you know, of course, as you can see, you can play this as a four-player game, or you can control all of the characters in a solo game. You can ramp up the difficulty by playing with fewer than four, but yeah, that might be a bit tricky. You'll have to do well. But that opportunity to really stamp your mark on the character and make it your own and make it feel like you on the tabletop, your avatar, so to speak, is something I really wanted to do with this. So, you know, hopefully that's good.
From the sound of it, it's got that feel, it's got that flavor. Now, the next slide I'm seeing is we've got the Dino Action cards that you were talking about.
Yes, correct. So that's just a little bit of how how they look, and I realize I've shown them on screen already, but you'll be able to see them a little bit better there. So you've got a couple of Dilo action cards. Those will be in the box. A couple of Utahraptor action cards. Those will not be in the box because there's a different dino type going to be. The Dilos will be in the core set. But we're going to have some different dino types that we haven't seen before in the core box. The way in which we are going to hope to get regular Drowned Earth dinos into your Ulaya Chronicles games, or to get you AI decks, action decks for your Drowned Earth models, is we are going to, at various stretch goals, commission some alpha sculpts for each dino type. And you will be able to buy the alpha sculpt will come with the profile card for Drowned Earth, the profile card for Ulaya Chronicles, and the appropriate action deck for that dino type. So you buy the alpha sculpt, you've got everything you need to play with the rest of your the dino collection of that type anyway, in Drowned Earth or in Ulaya Chronicles.
Yeah, so you, basically you get cool new model, and you're essentially getting a booster for Alaya.
Exactly.
I like that. I like that idea a lot.
Yeah. So if you go to the next slide, I'll sort of explain a little bit about how the AI mechanics work, just very briefly, because it's not complicated.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I've got dino actions here.
So you can see we've gone for symbols rather than words to make them easier on the eye and to make them easier to absorb. And of course, the way the symbols always work is that within the first 5 minutes of playing, you're like, oh, what are all these symbols? But, you know, within the first 20 minutes of playing, you've memorized them all. So the first one is pretty obvious. Anyone who's a Drowned Earth player will recognize that, the marksmanship symbol. So that denotes ranged combat. So the Dilos obviously spit. They range combat up to 8 inches with stun. Drowned Earth players will know what stun means. It's a special effect, negative effect. And the target is the nearest model in line of sight. And then we have a special claw symbol, which let's see if I can find a profile card. Yeah, here we go. So that denotes an extra ability that only triggers if the model who's drawn that card is an alpha. So alphas, we're going to have we're going to have juveniles, we're going to have regular dino types and alphas. And so each dino will have three different flavors. And that's a way of ramping the difficulty as we go through the campaign. You'll find you meet veterans and, you know, like mini boss fights and things like that.
Cool.
So next one down. So what you do is you resolve the first ability if you can. If there's no target, then you don't. You just move to the second one. That's move 6 inches away from the nearest model of light, nearest model in line of sight, and you stop to break line of sight. So basically, this Dilo is spitting at you and then running away and hiding.
That's quite different to what I've normally seen, because normally in a game like this, the AI is always putting you under pressure, keeping you under pressure. But if this thing is going, no, I'm going to hurt you and then I'm going to get out the way, it makes it more of a challenge, because then you're hunting it.
Well, that's the idea of having different dino types. You know, we've got the Dilos are hit and run. They want to keep their distance. They don't want to get up close and personal. As you approach them, they're going to try and run away and keep on shooting at you and hiding and making it difficult for you to get to them. Other dino types are much more belligerent. Some dino types will run in close combat, jump out of the bushes, attack you, and then they'll break combat and run away. The something else I should mention is the foot symbol, the movement symbol, is yellow. What that corresponds to, so you'll see on this one, there's a green a green foot. And if I show you some of the tiles, so now I explain, these are low quality printing prototypes, so they're a bit fuzzy, but you'll see that's a yellow foot on that tile. And it also tells you that it breaks line of sight and it gives you soft cover. That tile has a green foot. So basically the way it works is if you draw a card with a green foot, you can run over a green foot tile, but not a yellow foot tile. If you draw a yellow foot tile card, then you can move through these tile types as well.
I see. So the movement type is telling you what you can move over. I mean, like, I've got one here, it's got a red foot on it. So if I drew a dino card with a red, it can move through that? Or is red just, you cannot move through this?
Yeah, there are no dino cards at the moment. During this release of Alaya Chronicles, there aren't any dinos with red movement, but that's something that might come in the future. So yeah, we've got a red movement tile that blocks line of sight, and it blocks movement as well. Everyone's got to go around that. Mm-hmm. That's basically, in a nutshell, the way that the AI system works. So these card flips should be very streamlined, quick and easy.
Mm. Well, I mean, like, I'm loving the sound of having like episodic releases which tie into the main Drowned Earth game. I love the idea that this is like a light version of the game that people can use as their jump off point, or if it's something that they're wanting to do to slowly expand, learn the game, play it solo is always good because you can learn it before you take it to your friends. And yeah, it just it looks gorgeous. You do beautiful work. That's all.
Well, in a video game, you've got like PvP mode, and then you've got campaign mode. Mm-hmm. Well, this is campaign mode, and Drowned Earth is PvP mode.
Perfect. All right. One last key thing is, where are people going to get this? When is the campaign on? How long is it running for?
So head over to AlayaChronicles.com. That is a informational website that will tell you a little bit more about the campaign. When you get to the bottom of that page, there is a link to join the mailing list. And if you join that mailing list, perhaps we can also put it up in the Weekender video description. If you follow that link, then you will sign up to our email list. And when the Kickstarter goes live, you'll be notified. But the date to put in your diary is the 5th of May. So coming up pretty soon. Launch date, 5th of May. We'll have the project page up a few days early, so people can sort of see and have a think about what they want to do. Very exciting. Just like last time, we are going to have a month-long party. We're going to have lots of fun events, lots of cool initiatives. We're going to do some gaming over Tabletop Simulator. We're going to run some RPG sessions. We're going to have, as I mentioned, the sort of pirate versus dino rivalry. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like it. If you are a fan of this game, this world, definitely get in and check it out. Also stay tuned, because I myself am going to actually try and get sat down with James on the screen and hopefully have a prototype copy of this game in front of me for James to walk me through how to play and teach you guys how to play this game as well. James, always a pleasure, mate. I wish you the very best with this. Everybody, get your comments in below. Tell us what you think. And when the Kickstarter goes live, or if it is live right now, go and check it out. We'll move on. We'll see you again soon.
So thank you, Justin, for bringing us the latest on the Drowned Earth. We've two more Kickstarters, Ben. Did you pick them this week?
I did, yes. Although one of them will be very, very familiar to Jerry, I'm sure. So,
let's kick off with them then. What other things are running on the Kickstarters right now?
So the first of these is from the team at Scale 75, and this is their Kickstarter for a selection of new paints which they've called Instant Colors. They are, in effect, a new sort of style of paint which will allow you to effectively put down one coat on your models, and that's all you'll need. So it's following in the footsteps of what Games Workshop did with the contrast paints, but then sort of tweaking things and sort of updating things to sort of mess around with the formula as well.
Are they better than contrast?
That is the test, yeah. They have put together a bunch of sort of videos and tutorials and stuff as part of their Kickstarter page, and their claims are that you will just effectively need one coat to go down the miniature, and that's all it'll need to sort of make armor look good, or flesh and that kind of thing. As with we've seen with contrast paints as well, these are very, very good for blending. So you're not going to have to learn too many techniques in that format. You're just going to have to be able to put together the two different styles of paint, and they'll come together very nicely. As you can see there by that little infographic, model that would have taken, you know, sort of 8-9 hours or whatever to paint, it takes only like 40 minutes, something like that, maybe a bit longer than that. So, you know, big miniatures don't take very long to paint. I can attest to the fact that working with contrast from all the stuff from Doom, some of those big models there, it does make painting them a lot easier. The one thing that I think is key to understand effectively from the outset when it comes to these paints is that they do not make your miniatures look exactly like they would have looked if you were using traditional methods. They look different, but yes. whether or not that's good or bad to you is entirely up to you and your own opinion on things. I think once you get used to the look of contrast models, they look pretty freaking awesome.
Bookworm, a dragon.
I know, it's it is lovely looking.
Over the last couple of weeks in the XLBS show, Warren's been talking about a dragon he's working on. Look at that, Warren, a dragon.
Have that in the studio.
Yeah, this is...
one of the Rising Sun dragons.
Yeah. My dragon, yeah.
Let me show the world.
So this is the dragon for my 28mm Mongolian fantasy army.
Yeah.
As you can see, I still have not applied any color to him because I'm still shiting myself over over whether I should do this or send this down to John. We should send this to John. That's what we should do.
John's got plenty of things to be going.
And now Warren returns.
He's not allowed.
Warren returns to normality. Hobby by proxy.
Yes. Well, there are some things that my big club hands should never really be touching. Okay. And
this is like contrast paints, Warren. I've seen you use contrast paints at UK Games Expo, and all the comments said you were the best painter they'd ever seen.
Well, there you go. So clearly working around with some of these instant colors of contrast is probably a good thing, but
except for that one twat that called me a gorilla with a brush.
So with the instant color stuff, they have put together a range of different sort of selections. A lot of them are based around the same kind of shade. So they've done sort of like a red set or a blue set or a green set. This then changes up slightly when you look towards the actual pledges that you do for this campaign. So you can pledge for either one of those sort of sets of colors with that kind of shade range, or I believe there's like a 70 euro-ish.
Yeah, the wizard set is.
Yeah, so the wizard set is effectively all the colors you'd need to start painting.
Here we go.
No, how many colors are in the wizard set?
I'm not entirely sure. I think it's 16. It's 10 or 16.
Is it 10 or 16? I don't know.
There is that exact set. So
I went, just send me it all.
Eight times two, 16 plus medium.
Yeah. Is that the biggest set, or is there a bigger set?
There are bigger sets than that, which come with all the different shades. But that is effectively nice. The wizard set is the set that will come with like a red, a yellow, a green, a blue, all that kind of thing. So you can paint pretty much everything from that. It also comes with the medium, so things get slightly more expensive. One of the things that is important to understand with those sets is that while you're obviously paying more money, you don't just get double the amount of paints or something. You also get like brushes and all sorts of different weird things, like primer and all that kind of thing as well.
Yeah.
Animations. I'm sold.
I think the key thing with this is how this is going to go down when it comes to the retail side of things. Because once it goes to retail and you can just pick and choose the colors you want, hopefully it's going to be at that nice price level. They have said it's going to be on the cheaper side of things, where you can just pick up one or two of these different paints and you'll be set effectively for quite a long time.
Go back up to that £700 retail one, just so we get a feel for what the entire range kind of looks like. So it's like, so there's 48 different colors in total.
Yeah.
18 primers, so there's six of each. So there's three primer colors then.
Three primer colors. There's an ivory, a gray, and a white, and then also available in sprays, although the sprays are only available via retailer pledges.
Mm-hmm. Because obviously trying to ship aerosols and that kind of thing, I guess. But
it's a bigger range than contrast.
It is, yeah. And that's one of the things I think is quite interesting about this, that they've got this nice selection of different colors. And also they've kind of taken on board what a lot of people said about the kind of primer level stuff for contrast and tried to create a few more different versions of that. So
the interesting thing of this is I've only ever heard good things about Scale 75's paints.
Hmm. Yeah, they seem to go down quite well with a lot of people. They design paints for painters because that was effectively what Scale 75's range is. Was and still is. So, you know,
I'm fascinated. The right thing, so. I only have a small selection of Scale 75, but they're a gel-based acrylic rather than water-based, so they apply differently. But by God, they're matte. oh my god, they are so mad. And the couple where they've painted things in the videos and where they've shown, you know, like a rotating Obi-Wan or the Gamorrean guard, the thing about contrast is it has to be high gloss to flow. They look a little bit matter, but they still have some gloss to them, so I'm wondering how they compare. So I felt the best way to find out was just to order it all. So
it can't be that glossy. I was painting a guy last night with contrast paints, and he doesn't look super.
Yeah, you need to give it a really good shake, but there is definitely a sheen. It's a satin off a contrast paint. Yeah.
Whereas scale 75 suck the light out of your eyeballs. That's what they are.
But is it the contrast paint or the primers that they're going over?
It'll be the contrast, because it's the contrast. The is.
Yeah, it is the contrast. So.
As I say, I think one of the key things with instant color and contrast is that it makes your miniatures look very different from probably your mate's models across the table. But if you're happy with the way that that looks, then, you know, great. What does it matter? That's fantastic. Yeah. Like, as they say, as part of the Kickstarter, this is effectively a paint range, a bit like contrast was, for people that aren't that fussed about, you know, the sort of traditional painting methods and just want to make things look good on the tabletop. And for a lot of people that have very, very big plastic-filled Kickstarters, this is the kind of thing that people are going to like. So,
even with that, it's another tool in the toolkit. I mean,
exactly, yes.
Van Hildago has been doing a range of tutorials using contrast as the first step, and then highlighting like afterwards, and they look mind-blowing, and you wouldn't have thought that they started with the contrasts. It's where you want to stop along that scale.
The same like Duncan Rhodes, formerly of Games Workshop, has been doing the same kind of thing. He's been using contrast paints and using it effectively as that kind of base layer to then build
Same thing as John. Most of John's recent painting tutorials, I specifically set him the challenge where he did the big Raging Heroes kit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And when he went to paint it, I said, John, I would like you to paint that with contrasts. And he said, really, a kit like that with contrasts? I said, yes, absolutely, because... You know, I want to kind of, you want to take the fear out of these big, extraordinary kits, you know, because many of us will look at those kits and go, oh, I could never have that because I'd never be able to paint it. Well, I said to John, I want you to demonstrate that we could paint it, you know, and we could use contrasts to do it. So it is painting by numbers, you know,
it's one of the things I think is a key, like, point to sort of, dwell on is that idea that those bigger miniatures, you may think normally if you're going to be painting that with a traditional painting style, oh god, I've got to get my brush into all those little nooks and crannies and do that thing. Because of the way contrast instant color flows, you don't have to worry too much about that, and because it kind of produces natural shadows and that kind of thing, it makes painting those really large miniatures and also a lot of intricate miniatures very, 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 very easy. So
it takes some experimenting though to get used to.
Yeah.
Because there is that hump of trying to get over. It looks like this when I paint it normally, and here's the contrast version, which looks nice, but looks different. And my brain's looking at going, do I like it? Yeah. And eventually my brain's going to go, that was only 2.5 hours work. Yeah.
Yes. It's because contrast, because it does the work for you in a lot of it, you never end up with the result that you are expecting. You end up with the result that the medium actually just provides. And then sometimes you'll maybe see a wee point of pulling somewhere where you're going, oh, I wouldn't have done that. I think it creates maybe a little disconnect between you and the model. But I've got to say, I am super interested in this Scale 75 stuff.
It looks really good.
I definitely want to give this a go. I want to find out more. I may reach out through the old interwebs to the Scale 75
folks. I'm interested because of the sheer level of colors that they're showing there. That's a good wide variety. And you've been saying, Warren, these guys get glowing reviews all the time when people talk
about
this.
This is a company that is committed to color. There's a supreme commitment from these guys in Scale 75 to paint. So if this had just been another contrast thing, I might have been interested, you know. But when you see a boutique outfit like these guys do it, I'm interested. I'm just really interested to see what did they discover? What's it like? So yeah, we will try and find out more about that.
Well, 7 days.
Jerry's going to get a bunch of stuff, so it'd be cool to see how that turns out. So yeah.
7 days left on that Kickstarter, guys. So you still have a little bit of time yet if you fancy hopping in.
They're nearly at £500,000, so they're well funded.
Ben, what's next, my man?
So next up is the stuff from Andy Hobday and Paul Hicks, or as I like to call them, Hobday and Hicks, detectives at large. Because it sounds definitely like a cop show. And this is the Kickstarter for their Baron's War 2 collection.
Oh, Ben, you're really spoiling us.
which expands on the range that they previously bought to Kickstarter and did very, very well indeed. So this is a selection of characters, foot troops, infantry, knights on foot, peasants, Robin Hood, Friar Tuck, Little John and Will Scarlet, they're all here. This is a bunch of awesome looking sculpts from the one and only eminent Paul Hicks, and brought to life as part of Hobday's new range for the Baron's War, to create a range of models that you can use to play medieval games on the tabletop. As they say as part of the Kickstarter, you can use these for playing things like Dragon Rampant or Saga, but you can also play, and if you back for this Kickstarter, you also get this, their own game, or Hobday's own game, called Baron's War, which is in the alpha stages right now, so you get a free PDF of that to play around with as well. So if you like the idea of playing some skirmish-style battles on the tabletop, this is a range for you to go and check out and dive into. As with pretty much everything from Paul Hicks, the range is incredibly characteristic, filled with sort of narrative and detail and all that kind of thing. Really, really nice sculpts. And it's definitely a period that I would have liked to see, and now I can see more of it on the tabletop. Mm. Because like, we see a lot of stuff for the Dark Ages, we see a lot of stuff for the Ancients, and we see a lot of stuff for medieval, but at a grand scale. I like the idea of playing a lot more sort of skirmishy style stuff within the medieval period, and the Baron's War and that kind of internal struggle during the period of the Magna Carta really kind of brings that to the fore, with your little tiny warring factions going up against each other and, you know, going out to backstab somebody who's trying to bring something along a wagon train or something like that. This is very much in that kind of wheelhouse. Obviously, this all also works for the Crusades as well.
Yes, I was about to say, this is 12th century. This is Third Crusade era stuff. Be looking at here. So what immediately springs to mind for me is a skirmish game through the back streets of Acher, where you would have the Lionheart and some of his knights going in and kicking some Saracen butt through some back streets. I think that would be incredible. And then the other thing to bear in mind is that you have the whole route between Europe and the Middle East, because they had to pass through that, where they ended up, you know, maybe pissing off Turks or Constantinople's or who knows what, you know. So, this is my period. I love this, but it's 28 mil.
Like that line.
Let me see. Can we embiggen the Jerry for me?
You probably won't be able to, because it won't focus. There's no light there.
You need more hands.
But is that Richard himself, is it?
That's Richard himself that arrived sculpted by Paul Hicks this morning.
Yeah, because they did a special thing
over
the salute weekend, I believe it was. And Jerry may have bought some more models. Who knew?
Jerry's got a phone, a red phone, and he picks it up, and it doesn't even dial it.
A long time ago, my friends responded or referred to me as Tyler Durden from Fight Club. Do you just wake up and there's miniatures there that you don't remember ordering? It's like, do you phone around and go, don't send me those? Yeah, you said you'd send that. No, don't cancel my order. Yeah, you said you'd definitely say that. Don't worry, we've got you covered.
For me, this particular period of the medieval is my favorite, because it's the most rock and roll of the medieval period, because you're just late enough now to have the big names like like Richard the Lionheart. You know, you've got your Robin Hoods and stuff like that. You know, at this stage, your Templars and stuff have established themselves as a supreme force within the medieval world, you know. So it is truly, I'm sure, to the very astute historian, that he may find more interesting periods for very technical, historian-y kind of academic kind of reasons. But for us normal dudes, this is the rock and roll period, as far as I'm concerned.
It's definitely the case that this period of history gives you that kind of Game of Thronesy style Westeros feel, because it's a lot of infighting, it's a lot of backstabbing, it's a lot of people who consider themselves much higher in the pecking order than they should be. You know, there's a lot of different factions and groups like the Templars and all the other different knightly orders that have very different ideas about how things should be happening. So if you want to play in kind of the turmoil of Europe, this is definitely the kind of period to do it in. Yeah. And it's one of those things where you don't necessarily have very clearly defined factions and a lot of people fighting for everybody and all that kind of thing. So if everybody in your group wants to play with knights and stuff, you get to do that, which
you totally do. So. You totally do. it's incredible. I just deeply in love with that, that period, that period of time. Right. So for the Cagney and Lacey Kickstarter of Baron Wars 2, you've got 9 days left on that one. It's a no-brainer. Those models are beautiful. Two big names.
Also, a little thing as well. While they have the rules in Alpha Stage for the Baron's War, War 2 and all that kind of thing, they are also working on rules for Dark Age skirmishing as well. So if you like Dark Age stuff, and Footsore do happen to do quite a lot of Dark Age models, they're also working on some skirmishy stuff for that as well.
And bear in mind that Warzone's Kung Fu Samurais will be coming to a tabletop near you. Right. It's time to give something away. In this world of lockdown, we are truly discovering the 3D printing is the shit. Right, we got another great giveaway for you guys. Okay, so to tell you about one last Kickstarter that is running from one of my most favoritest companies in all of the world, these are the kings of the 3D print file, and it is, of course, printable scenery. They have a Kickstarter up at the moment called Brave New Worlds. If you haven't seen their kind of, how would we describe it? The Aztec-y kind of... Star Wars-y stuff.
It's sci-fi, it's fantasy, it's modern apocalypse, it's whatever you want it to be, because it's,
You gotta check it out. So they have a Kickstarter on, scroll down, Lloyd, just so as I can go, see that New Eden stuff? I want it! I want all of it! When I'm finished working with my shrooms, that New Eden stuff, that is going to be the next feature table at the on Tabletop Visitor Center. Look at it! Just look at it! Oh,
it does look very, very cool. Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be incredible.
I've seen a lot of people talking about their idea of doing some kind of like Stargate stuff, using some of the models from Hassle Free and all that kind of thing. So.
Yeah. I'm just so excited about that.
When you come to paint that, though, Warren. Justin and John are going to be very busy.
Yes. They'll do a good job. I have been painting the terrain as of recently. So we should... Oh, no, I didn't actually.
Well, so hold on a minute. Look at Justin this. Justin did it, yeah. Check out all the vines on that. Are you going to paint all those vines?
No, John will. Yeah, so that is the Kickstarter that they have running. It's well funded. Absolute. It's such an obvious jump in for this one. They have the post-apocalyptic stuff in there as well. And they've gave us a model that we can give to you guys for free.
For free.
So this is a sample print of the billboard. Everybody needs a billboard, and you can put your stickers and print stuff out, and you know, you know, slag me off. Doing a gorilla with a brush kit on the top. Well, there are lights. I think there's lights in the set that you can print. Anyway, it's another free model for you to print out at home. You can print a few of these. They're great blocking terrain. Once again, we're trying to give you something that is just useful in many different settings. You print them out, have them on hand, set them up. If you want that, there'll be a link below for you to go and get your free version at store.ontabletop.com. And if you're quick, you'll also be able to download the previous freebies that we gave away as well. So that there's a barbarian in there, there's a Necron piece of terrain in there, and there's an incredible female paladin or cavalry piece in there as well. So yeah, go and check it out. Right. Remember, this week we're giving away Battlegroup Northag Starter Bundle Rulebook, blah, blah, blah. To be in with a chance, all you have to do is like this video, click subscribe, and post a comment below. And if you do the same thing over at ontabletop.com, you double your chances. Right, dudes, that wraps us up for another Friday night. We will see you on Sunday over at ontabletop.com. Come and join the Cult of Games.
Go ahead and check out our other content on screen now. And while you're at it, why not hit subscribe and remember to ding our dong. Go on, you know you want to click it. Go on.